then the truth booth, and the truth booth has like all these lasers, and the lasers scan your body, and then on the screen you'll
say,
that like,
is how I know.
Yeah. How else
the
would
lasers
a truth booth
know?
Work?
Yeah. The lasers know whether you're a perfect match. Yeah.
And then on the screen it'll say like match or no match.
Well, it's like when you go on a Tinder date, and then you're like, okay, we've reached the end. Let's get going full body scan.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor-adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon.
Hey, everyone. We're here with a little surprise bonus episode from the world of reality dating TV shows. Today, we're going to talk about MTV's Are You the One? A bit of a departure from the Bachelor franchise.
Oh, but it's so good. So much to talk about. And our guest, Kate Dreese, senior features editor at Vice, is not only a fan of the show, she also just published a feature exploring this underappreciated gem from every angle. Kate, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a pleasure. And
we're so excited.
Yeah.
This is a real treat.
I've been wanting to talk about Are You the One for a while, so I'm really happy to have a good reason to dig into it.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that, as I say in the piece, it's not really necessarily like a water cooler show the way The Bachelor is, just because it hasn't been on as long. It doesn't have as many spinoffs. And The Bachelor obviously like sort of dominated the market very early, and then I think once you get that market share, it's hard to get in there. But everyone I know who has started watching it or who I've talked to about it is like, oh my god, they like love it.
For our listeners who haven't seen it, can you just kind of give a little rundown on like what the structure is?
So one of the exciting things about the show is that it is extremely confusing. So whereas like I think you can probably watch one episode of The Bachelor and like pretty simply get it, you can do that with Are You the One, but you realize you get it and you're still like, there's a lot going on here. So the premise is it's a house dating show, so you know, kind of like The Real World, except everyone's dating. And most seasons, except for the one that is the eighth season, the newest season, are between 10 and 11 pairs. And so essentially what happens, 10 women, 10 men, or 11 women, 11 men. And essentially what happens is before the show, the producers, matchmaker, some sort of amorphous, never quite explained group of people decide how to pair up all those people.
Experts.
Yes, experts. And so everyone has a perfect match, quote unquote, going into the house. And so their job in the house is to figure out who their perfect match is. And if everyone figures out who their perfect match is, they find love, and then they also all win $1 million that they split as a group.
I mean, the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Love and money.
Totally, totally. The mechanisms for getting there are a little more complicated than I probably want to outline, because they'll take like a long time. But essentially, they have like two main ways that you can figure it out. You can, every episode, you can go into what's called the truth booth.
I love the truth booth.
Yeah, which is where you and the chosen person, which, you know, you've chosen through, depending on the season, a number of different ways. Sometimes it's like road rules challenges. The house then votes on those couples. It's a lot of steps. You get in the truth booth, and the truth booth has like all these lasers, and the lasers scan your body, and then on the screen it'll say like match or no match.
Full body scan.
Right. Right. Yeah. Was this it?
Yeah.
And then at the end of every episode, or most episodes, like The Bachelor, there's a matchup ceremony. So that means that everyone goes up and says, this is my perfect match. This is who I think my perfect match is. And they all put their hands on iPads and lock in. Yeah. And
it's very scientific.
Yes, very scientific. And then the beams of light shoot into the air, and the number saying this out loud makes it sound
so
even
hard
crazier.
To describe.
Wonderful. Yeah.
And the number of beams of light are the number of couples there that are perfect matches. And so essentially, like, for those of you math whizzes, the game uses factorial. So 10 factorial, 11 factorial this season. It'll be a little more complicated, as we'll probably get into, because of the season's twist. But it just means that, like, with every new person, there are, you know, tens of thousands of more options for who they could be with. But every time you figure out a match, that number decreases, like, very rapidly. So the game is, like, a combination of, like, game theory, but then also, like, competition, but then also, like, the regular sort of, like, it's a bunch of, you know, sort of Bachelor in Paradise style, like, or Love Island, a bunch of people in a house, like, very horny and trying to have sex with each other.
And also, often, doesn't it come up that someone might be into someone who isn't their perfect
yes,
match?
Yes, that yeah. is a very common
that.
Trope.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's always a good way to create drama.
I love the way this show has this tension between, like, the strategy, the game theory of it, and then the love. And they often go in saying, like, we have to follow our hearts, guys, or we're not going to find our perfect matches. And they just keep saying that. And I'm like, I don't know if the evidence actually really bears that out.
Yeah, there's a real mix. And you see this sort of waffle back and forth throughout the seasons where, you know, people who have really found themselves super attracted to someone or multiple someones end up, you know, creating most of the drama, because then there's other parts of the house that, like, had to give up their person because they're not a perfect match, or who haven't found them and are like, we need to, you know, play by the game. And so there's a lot of stuff happening in it that I find extremely compelling for multiple reasons.
Did you start watching, like, when the show first
no,
premiered?
No. So, yeah. So this will be the 8th season. It's been on for, I want to say, 5 years. And I just started watching a couple years ago. Like, a friend recommended it. And I was, like, home one night with a couple friends, and we were, like, it was, like, winter and cold. And someone was like, oh, we should try this. And I think, I think it was the 5th season or the 6th season was, like, airing. So they were all streaming. And we watched one episode, and I was like, oh, my God. This is, like, totally blown my mind.
It's super addictive. The first time I ever saw Are You the One was over, like, the holidays a few years ago, and I was back in Maryland and went to my friend's house. It might have even been, like, Christmas Day, and so it was, like, a bunch of Jews. And we put on one episode of maybe, like, the 2nd or 3rd season and ended up sitting there and watching the entire yeah. season in one sitting.
Yeah.
It's so addictive. I love how it also, like, it has this internal culture the way The Bachelor does, where people start referring to each other in these very coded ways. Like, oh, we're a beam. Like, obviously. Yeah. That means nothing outside of Are You the One world. Yeah. But, like, on
or
the
if
show.
Or if you said, like, he's my perfect match, someone would be like, mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, like, okay.
Oh, that's so cute, sweetie.
Right. Also, the term perfect match just sounds so earnest yeah. and, like, deeply romantic. And that's not exactly the vibe of Are You the One.
No, I mean, so what I write about and what I kind of dove into while reporting this was, I think what it does that I find really compelling is it has a real self-awareness about what it is and what it is not. So it knows that this is both a very young demo, like, I think the oldest are rarely older than 29, which is, like, often true of The Bachelor too, but no one on this show really is like, I'm going to get married. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, and the creators of the show are not going into it saying we want a wedding out of this, we want babies, though both of those things have happened. They're also not saying, like, which also happens is, like, if you don't end up with your perfect match and you end up dating someone else from the franchise, which happens all the time now, and we see that on The Bachelor too, these, like, little universes have been created, that's, like, a failure either. And I think that's something that The Bachelor universe has been sort of slow to pick up on, because the entire conceit of their show is based on this, like, classic heteronormative, like, idea of what a relationship structure is. This show is, like, very messy, but, like, leans into that, which is one of the reasons I found it, like, particularly refreshing.
So yeah, it's so interesting just that, like, they lean so heavily on the perfect match, like technology, to the point that, like, as you mentioned, people will get shamed for still trying to be involved with someone on the show who's been proven not to be their match because it's not, it's like selfish and it's like blinkered and they should be finding their real perfect match who's like perfect for them. But it also doesn't seem to really buy into it that much ultimately. Like once they're all matched up, they're like, well, great job, everyone. Like we don't expect this to go anywhere.
Yeah, it's very much like I think what I find interesting about the money aspect of it is it creates a mechanism for everyone to have to work as a group. So it's like they're competing, but not really against each other. Mm. And so when they get in their own ways or when they get in each other's way, that is like not a sustainable system. Whereas like if you have a classic dating show is a bunch of people going for one person, then all the competition comes from people who are actually competing with one another because there can only be one winner, right? Mm. So there's sort of a much more – there's like this undercurrent of we're all in this together a little bit, which I think is kind of sweet accidentally.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, the perfect match stuff seems to function more as like a plot device than the actual kind of overarching ideology. Right. That,
like it's an artificial boundary right. that they've created to force people to try dating someone yeah. other than their initial
yes,
attraction.
Right, right.
Rather than like bringing in a new person, and then it's like a musical chairs thing, like something like Love Island,
yeah. or Bachelor in Paradise.
Their yeah. mechanism is the perfect match.
Yeah, and the right. premise is very much. I mean, they're obviously secretive about how they match people, but from what I can tell, like they do psychological testing, they do IQ tests, they interview your family and friends, they have experts who help them. Like, I don't. They're obviously working from a pool of people who might already have a lot in common and that they're, like, young, diverse, very hot, and all want to be on
well,
a reality
you
show.
Hot.
Yeah. But I will say that from that, I got the sense that there really is, like, they want people to be entertaining, but they also don't want to just put people together that don't make any sense. And you see that in that, like, a bunch of the people I talked to were, like, you know, even – like, I understand why this person was matched with me. Some people were like, I understand it because of X, Y, Z sort of surface level reasons, even though I would never be with them in real life. And then some people were like, you know, I feel like I know why we were matched, but also we just work really hard at our relationship. And I think that is sort of like the key there, right, is – it, to me, in reporting it and looking at it, it sort of started to feel to me like just another way people meet each other. It sounds like crazy to say that because it's like a reality show. But at this point, like these shows have become ecosystems of their own. And it's not dissimilar to meeting someone on a dating app. Like, you know, those match percentages are relatively arbitrary as well. This is just like doing it for entertainment value, not for like personal gain.
Yeah.
And I actually think that the Bachelor has something similar going
Definitely.
On. And I think that's why we often talk about when we talk about like the success rate of the Bachelor, which there's always a lot of focus on. It's like it's just another way to meet someone. So, yeah, you might meet someone on a TV show and date that person for a few years or a few months, or you might get married to them. But like at the end of the day, we live in this kind of wild dating ecosystem anyway. We're all kind of grasping at people in various, I don't know, through various
It would almost be weird if no one from the show had ever gotten married. Like you have all those seasons of The Bachelor and of Are You the One where all these people are meeting and they're all equally hot. And like single mostly,
and also like anything that just
eventually
brings,
someone's
going
to get married.
Communities of people together and like form anything that creates a new community essentially.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you kind of consider that a pool for future dating prospects, even if it's not within the structure of whatever show mm-hmm. you've kind of come off of?
Yeah, and you also have this shared experience that like a very limited pool of people will understand.
No one else will ever get it.
Yeah, I mean it's bigger than it used to be in that at least someone who's been on another reality show can like, you know, when you interview these people, they all the stories sort of start to sound the same. Like, you know, they cut you out from the outside world. You don't talk to your parents. You don't, you know, get to have pens and paper. You don't like they all use kind of the same mechanisms. I think the difference is like what is the intent with those mechanisms? Like
right.
my sense, and I'm sure there are exceptions to this, But is that there are different producing styles on the show. So, like, we know in The Bachelor, especially in early seasons, they were pretty heavy-handed producers. From talking to a couple of the producers on Are You the One, they seem to favor, like, a lighter touch. So mm-hmm. they sort of throw people in there and, like, let them do what they're going to do. They're not trying to necessarily paint people in, like, villain roles or, you know, golden child roles, because there are so many people, they don't really need to do that. Like, everyone can be kind of a wide range of personality types and be kind of messy because they're not beholden to this very specific structure that The Bachelor has set up, you know, since 2002.
Yeah. So on the scale of, like, totally scripted to, like, they just installed some cameras, they're closer to the, like, just installed some cameras point.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, I wasn't in the house and, you know, they've had hundreds of people on the show now, so I don't want to speak for anyone for whom I'm sure there are plenty of people who were like, I hated it. It was bad. But it seems like they do kind of just let people go, which, you know, and then what happens next is how do you take all that footage and make it a compelling narrative? These, I mean, I don't want to call them kids because they're in their 20s, but they're, you know, they're like kind of wilding out, and like they seem to give them enough without having to be like, you know, you should go talk to so-and-so and like, did you hear that so-and-so said this? Like, I didn't get the sense that they do a lot of that or if any of that.
It seems like the main thing that they do is just like, things are getting a little quiet. Let's throw a big party for them. And then everyone gets drunk and there's drama.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they also like, there's a lot of alcohol, as all these shows have. They stay up very late. Mm. So they're probably sleep deprived and exhausted. You know, it's a heightened scenario. And many would argue, and I wouldn't disagree, it's not necessarily healthy. But I, but I also sort of like think a lot of regular dating is not very healthy either. So I'm sort of loath to say that it is that dissimilar from real life, I guess. Like at the end of writing and thinking about this for a long time, I don't know if I just like drank too much of the Kool-Aid, but it really did. I really started to see more of the similarities than the differences.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll hear a lot more from Kate about Are You the One? So we've talked about how Are You the One is such a compelling watch. Why do you think it's been around for 8 seasons, but it hasn't really broken through as, you know, a water cooler show? Like, do you think it's where it lives? Do you think it's the structure? Do you think it's the messaging behind it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of things. Like I said, you know, The Bachelor has really taken over the ecosystem, and I'm not sure, you know, other shows are popular and broken through, like Love Island, obviously, lately, or Dating Naked or Naked and Afraid or all those. But I wouldn't call many of those, you know, like steadfast water cooler shows either. You know, it's not on a national network. It's on MTV. So it's a cable network. And it's also specifically targeted to a very small demo. So, like, I don't think a 65-year-old would love watching Are You the One, but I don't think they're supposed to. Like, it's not for them. And I think that's what MTV has always done well, is they know what their demographic is and they know what they'll want. And so when you see with this new season, which is the first to feature an entirely sexually fluid cast, which means that anyone could date anyone instead of just, like, men being with women and vice versa. That, from my reporting, that came very organically from the kinds of people they were looking at casting, and they kept hearing from people, you know, when I date men, I'm interested in this, but when I date women, I'm interested in this. And they were like, okay, if this is the pool of people we're getting and this is what our demographic is reflecting, then this is what we should be showing in the show. Which is like, again, you know, not to harp on The Bachelor, but obviously we're on a Bachelor podcast, so I think I can. You know, that's a show that has been resistant to changing its formula. And when they do a twist, it's sort of like minor at best. And I think this is like a pretty big one. And from watching the first couple episodes, it didn't feel a ton like a lot I've seen on TV before.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it would make it a lot more complicated, like a lot more opportunities for relationships to get shaken up Like, did it make the show feel even more just like a lot's going on, or were you able to pretty easily get a sense of like which relationships?
Yeah, so there are fewer people this season. So there are only 16 instead of 22, which I think they did because it would have, I don't want to say it would have been impossible to figure out, but it would have been probably pretty hard. So I assume behind the scenes they like crunched the numbers and were like, okay, this is like a fair shot.
Based on the factorials.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think that the thing I'll say about the new season is that there's definitely like a different energy when you have a cast of people who are all queer, non-binary, you know, however they'd like to identify themselves, in that they have a specific shared experience, right? Like they're used to being othered in a world that is not particularly accepting of them. And so that definitely brought an energy to it that, you know, a previous cast of like only heterosexual people or seemingly only heterosexual identifying people probably wouldn't have and hasn't have. There have definitely, and one of the contestants on this season I talked to spoke about this, is there have been some seasons of Are You the One where there are some dudes who are like, have a real misogynistic bent to that.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is that they're often called out on it and it's not particularly shown in a good light.
But it's interesting because then some of the women still have to end up with them, which is so different from something like The Bachelorette.
You can't just toss the misogynist.
Yeah. All the women are like, I guess one of us is his perfect
sacrificial lamb.
So that energy is not in this season, I would say, or at least what I've seen.
That's interesting. Like, we have seen dating shows that were sort of designed for or around like queer, non-straight, non-heteronormative couples, and we've seen shows that mostly entirely feature hetero couples. But I don't think we've ever really seen before a show that started as one really just evolve and to incorporate the other in that way. Like, that's really unusual.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they're very, from talking to people behind the scenes, they're really excited about doing it, and they feel like it's boundary pushing and at least on U.S. television, it definitely is. The U.K. has always had, like, they have innovated reality in ways that I feel like we are often not ready for.
No, when I watch Love Island, I'm like, I am overwhelmed by Love Island.
Like, I love it, but it's just so much.
It's also just literally a lot of hours.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. It's just almost too much content.
And I watch
me.
A lot of TV, and that is too much for me to take in.
It's like varsity level. I say this as someone who like does a lot of binge watching of trash. So like,
Well, I binge watched like 10 episodes of it, and then I was like, I don't even think I'm halfway through this season.
Exactly.
What's going
on? You need to feel like you're making progress in the narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like it does. Like, I watch Love Island, and I'm like, I don't feel like even I have trained hard enough yet to really
the Brits
embody
just have
this
something
fandom.
On us.
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, when you think about like Are You the One and the pantheon of kind of dating shows out there, is there anything else that you think it's really akin to? Like, it's obviously pretty different from The Bachelor, but are there any other shows that you think are doing something similar?
I don't know. I mean, part of the reason I wanted to write about it was because it did feel so different to me. You know, it also has this thing where I don't know if you guys have done this when you've watched back episodes, but it's like, you know, you can look at who everyone ends up with. And so watching has like a totally different experience because, you know, like Katie is supposed to be with Polly, but Polly's dating Molly or whatever. And like, you know, you can see all that foreshadowing, and it makes for like a really fascinating viewing experience. I think we've talked about on here that like I always read the spoilers for The Bachelor because it's something like I really enjoy. It helps me like figure out the mechanisms of how they're editing the show, and that like for me is enjoyable. This I've found is like, it's not really about the editing as much as like it's really fascinating to watch people sort of like stumble their way to an answer.
Yeah. It's I think one of my favorite things about it is the way that they're all forced to just stay around each other after their relationships have failed.
Yeah.
Which is something that obviously most people avoid doing in real life. You don't see it on The Bachelor because they just leave. And it's really just a uniquely heartbreaking and uncomfortable thing to watch, but also just a rare opportunity.
And also it's like in that way they're like, I mean, everything just speeds up, right? Like time, you know, they film for like 6 weeks or something. Mm-hmm. And time just really like goes very quickly. So it does lend one to wonder like, okay, if you were like stuck in a house with your ex-boyfriend for like 3 weeks, like maybe you'd just get over him faster because he was like, you had to. Like you had to go find someone else. They were right there. Yeah.
But it's also like you be like it's – and we do see this on Bachelor in Paradise, couples being like – we're basically the mom and dad of the house, and we've been dating for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
totally.
And you get that on Are You the One, too.
Yeah, I mean, something that is funny about the show as well is, like, when someone's a confirmed perfect match and they find that out from the truth booth, that couple is, like, sent to the quote-unquote honeymoon suite. Mm-hmm. And so they don't spend time in the house. They only come back for matchup ceremonies. And you often get the sense that they feel really left out, that they're like everyone else is there. And it's presented as this idealized thing, like you're so lucky you found your person. But like if it's only you two and no one else is matched, you're just spending all your time
isolated
with a stranger in like a hotel room.
And like, sometimes they like didn't even really think they were a perfect match, but the rest of the house voted on it.
Yeah. And like, yeah, they're in Hawaii, which is cool. But, you know, I never got the sense that from watching the seasons where that happened, that any of them were like, you know, so happy to not be there. Like they come back in the matchups and they're like, what's going on? You know, tell us everything.
It is an interesting, like the structure of it is like you're basically kicked off the island, not for failing or for being romantically undesirable, but for succeeding too mm-hmm. much and finding love. And then you're no longer like, right. Welcome.
Perhaps that's the great equalizer. Yeah. Like in real life, you know, we live in a society so structured around couples. There's something sort of
But the
gratifying.
Show is also structured
it
around
It is structured.
Couples.
I know. Well, it sort of plays both sides in kind of all of these ways, which is what's so interesting. Like you have this undercurrent of like there is a perfect match, kind of the idea of soulmates, but then it also throws it aside and only really uses that to create tension. Yeah.
When you talk to the people who had appeared on the show, did you get the sense that they went on thinking of it as a dating experience or like a chance to find love, or were they thinking of selling things on Instagram afterwards? Were they just like, this will be like fun vacation?
Yeah, so it's obviously changed a lot since season one. I talked to several people from season one, and they all had like no idea what the show was going to be. Like they didn't know what the premise was when they got called up. It was just like an anonymous dating show for MTV. They get into the house, they don't really know what the rules are. That is a very different situation than now, obviously. Like I talked to two people from this new season, and one of them had watched like every season before and was like a huge fan, and one of them had never heard of the show and was cast on Instagram. So, you know, I think, and one of the creators of the show, Jeff Spangler, who works at Lighthearted Productions, which is the company that produces the show, told me that, like, as you'd suspect, it's harder to cast people now because there is this understanding that you could, you know, go on the show and just like make a killing off of sponsored content, which a lot of the contestants have done. I would say like on the Bachelor seasons, I mean, I guess there are more people per season too, right? And there have been more of them. I think you kind of only start to see like a handful of people really do that successfully out of each season. On Are You the One, it seems like all of them are doing it, if not all of them, like a lot of them are. And I don't know that means anything. It's just something that I've noticed. A couple of the people from season one that I talked to did seem to think that like the newer seasons are quote unquote less genuine in that the people on it, you know, must have ulterior motives. I don't know. I mean, I think like I sort of wonder like what is an ulterior motive when it comes to this? Like you all wanted the same thing at the end of the day, right? Like you wanted to go on this show.
Yeah.
Your reasoning behind it is sort of like, the here for the right reasons thing is sort of like a Bachelor trope that gets made fun of. But it does bring up this concept of like, even if you went on it just to have an experience, like those people still end up dating people on the show and like falling in love. It's like you don't really know where you're going to meet someone anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's something that feels satisfying to people, especially who were on these shows at a time when that that kind of social media influencer ecosystem didn't exist, to almost idealize and be like, well, back in my day, we were there for love. It was pure. But in reality, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Everyone who goes on a reality TV show is kind of like, who knows what the fuck will happen? And also, I guess I just, going on TV could be cool and fun.
The whole, like, the way they frame this on The Bachelor is very similar in a lot of ways to Are You the One, which is like, why would all these incredibly hot singles want to go on TV to date? And they're all like, because nothing else is working. And it's like, I don't really believe that. Like, there are other ways you could fix your dating life. So obviously that's just a lie. The thing that's happening is that you're like, I'm single, I might as well
go on TV.
Go on TV and be single rather than go on more blind dates or like go to therapy and figure out why I keep picking the wrong men, which is a big narrative on Are You the One sometimes.
It's totally.
Like, I always pick the wrong people. I need to be like fixed. And I'm like, yes, this dating show is going to fix you in a way
the
that therapy
thing
never
is
could.
That you can just go to therapy after the dating show and then work out multiple
issues
that have happened to you.
How many couples have ended up together through the show?
So a lot of them have ended up together. Have they stayed together is another question. So there's one married couple whose two babies, Ethan and Amber, from season one. I talked to them. They live in Austin. They're very happy. And then I think as of press time, there are like four or five couples that are from either the same season or different seasons. None of them perfect matches that are dating. There have been many, many, many more. Like at one point I was like, I'm going to try to make a web. And then I was like, this is, I have to write this piece. I don't have time to make a web, but I kind of want to just for my own.
It's like the L word. Like,
yeah, totally, totally, totally.
Just get some red string and like tush pins on your wall.
And you know, there are also feeder. There was one season spinoff, Are You the One Second Chances? And then there's X on the Beach, which is a, US version of a UK show. And a lot of Are You the One people also go on X on the Beach, which is also
and
a really
fun
show.
And some Bachelor people.
Yeah, some Bachelor people.
Bachelor, Vanderpump Rules, The Challenge. That show is like a real feeder and also very fun in a kind of a different way than Are You the One. That is like even more aware, I think, of its lack of reality, maybe. Like everyone on it is like, I'm a reality star and this is like my job. Like I'm an actor. And I think that is sort of refreshing in a way as well.
Conceptually, it's refreshing. I think watching it, I find it less enjoyable.
X on the Beach?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little less. I mean, also, like, season one I thought was really nuts and funny. I mean, for those who haven't watched X on the Beach, the premise is, like, a handful of reality stars, go to live in a house, same as Are You the One, and then they continually keep throwing their exes into the house to, like, mess things up. And then they have these like nonsensical, again, like kind of roast ceremonies at the end where they have to like vote people in and out. But the funny thing about that show is they have like a very tongue in cheek narrator and they do these very funny graphics where they'll do the like, you know, X, Y, Z dated, you know, K and then K dated A. It's like they're very aware of what it is, which, again, I really like. You know, there is a tenor of like, we're here for the paycheck.
Yeah. That does. Which like. Great. Like, get it.
Because no one like signs up to go like have their exes barge in on them while they're dating.
Just for
like,
fun.
No, I just think that this would be a really,
really
edifying
good way to
experience.
Work through some of my issues.
Yeah. I also think season two I didn't like as much because Farrah Abraham was on it and she was like very, very, very obviously just there for the money.
And Chad, right? From the
Chad
Bachelor.
Was there. Chad was weirdly fine. It was
I just
don't
want to.
I felt very uncomfortable watching
Chad.
Him being treated as a normal,
totally,
healthy
totally.
Person to date.
I think just like compared to Farrah, he seemed fine, which was weird. Season one I kind of like more than season two, but also season two had like several gay couples, which was really nice, and they were just kind of treated like the fabric of the house, which, you know, again, refreshing and nice to see.
Yeah. What about Second Chances? I've never watched Are You the One Second Chances.
They only did one season. I didn't get the sense it's something that's going to come back. It is kind of like a Bachelor Pad, the canceled Bachelor Pad, which is like they basically take contestants from perfect matches from previous seasons of Are You the One and make them do sort of like a Survivor style or like Amazing Race kind of thing.
Right.
I think there is a reason they didn't pick it up again. It's not bad. It's just like it doesn't have the same energy.
Yeah. When you were reporting on this, what's the thing that like surprised you the most?
I think like what surprised me is I had a general idea of the way I thought the show worked, and I was pretty ready to have that, like, just blown out of, like, out of my head. You know, that they did have maybe the slightly lighter producing touch that, you know, they did really think super purposely about having this, like, diverse cast. And, you know, all of my talking to people behind the scenes were like, they're really thoughtful. They really like working on the show, and they really want it to be fun and funny and, like, have that humor angle that I think, you know, something I kept thinking about was, like, a lot of the humor from The Bachelor comes from, like, laughing at people, and this show feels more like someone is probably laughing at themselves when they're watching it, too. Like they know that it was ridiculous. Yeah. And
I always think about this one challenge that they have them do, because they set up these weird, weird challenges to decide who's going to get to go on the out-of-the-house dates.
Yeah.
And often they're sort of, like, ludicrous and complicated, and I can't even explain the rules. But one of them I remember involved two people on both sides of, like, a 3D puzzle with, like, the puzzle was cut out in the board, and they had to thread a hot dog through it. Yeah. They each had to hold on to the hot dog from each end with their teeth, and then they had to work together to get the hot dog intact through the puzzle. And I was like, someone had a lot of fun coming
totally,
up with
yeah, that. Totally, totally, totally. Yeah. I think, yeah. And then there were just small things that are just always fascinating to hear about the way this stuff is made. You know, they film for like 20 hours a day. Mm. They have, you know, the producers have to work in shifts so that, you know, because you can't work that long. The cast is, like, not supposed to talk to the crew. Like, they tell them just to, like, pretend they're just cameras. Like, they don't want them, like, developing relationships with the people that are there to document them, which I thought was, like, pretty smart and interesting.
Has that ever happened? Like, it has on The Bachelor?
Not that I know of, but, again, doesn't mean anything. Yeah, so just, like, little things like that. I mean, I think it probably depends also on what you think is interesting. Like, I always find those, like, making of things to be pretty fascinating. And just, like, you know, one of the producers I spoke to, who was a story producer for a long time, which basically means she, like, figures out what they're going to put on television from all this footage, and essentially said, like, I was like, there's so many competing narratives. Like, how do you even track what to cut? And she was like, well, we basically have to work backwards. So we work from every matchup ceremony, and then we say, okay, how did we get to this point? Which I thought
was,
like, very interesting.
Because, and makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
Right, because how can you start at the beginning and then it's like everyone's zigzagging all over the place and they'll be like, and we ended up here.
Yeah, I would totally want to start at the beginning, but that is not efficient.
Yeah, and they just, you know, they take, like, copious notes along the way to just kind of track, okay, this is what's happening now, and this is how we make any of this make any sense. And they'll say, like, you know, we cut one thing and then nothing else makes sense, and so we have to add it back in. Like, oh no, it's not at all dissimilar to editing anything else. It just sounds like, you know, you didn't craft the narrative. It was kind of crafted for you, right? So it's a little less tangible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like I always forget kind of how many different, like, we focus so much on field producers on these shows, you know, because of things like Unreal, but there are story producers, there are editors, there are all of these people who have, like, who play a different role in the crafting and actual creation of this narrative.
Totally.
And it's not just, like, one person being like, and now we will focus on this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think it's, like, this is a show that has had, like, The Bachelor, I think a lot of these people work on a lot of seasons. So their showrunner was the same for a long time. Their, you know, EPs have been the same. The creators have been the same. They've had the same director for, I believe, all the seasons. And I think that probably lends itself to a consistency as well, even if you have some other people sort of, like, bopping in and out.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, just what is your elevator pitch for Are You the One to Bachelor fans who haven't yet watched?
Well, it's very funny that you ask this, because when I spoke to Terrence J, who is the current host of the show, he told me that he, like, doesn't have one because it's so complicated. He was like, I don't know how to, like, explain this to anyone, like, in a succinct way.
So then why should people watch it?
It's just really fun. Yeah, that's what I would say.
I think that's good.
It's like a breath of fresh air, kind of. It really feels like, even if it has all the parts of all these shows you've watched before, it's, like, kind of nothing I've ever seen before, which – is like incredible to me. I did this whole piece and I'm still not even sure how they do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely fun. And for a lot of our listeners, I think The Bachelor's sort of heteronormativity and like whiteness is of concern. So it sounds like this upcoming season, this current season in particular, might be really appealing.
Yeah. And like all the casts are extremely diverse racially, and people come from all over the country. And, you know, they actually talk about politics and what they believe and where they're from and what their family life is like. Like, you actually kind of get to know them, even though there's more people in the house, arguably, for most of the time.
Yeah, I remember Trump becoming, like, mm-hmm. a relationship wedge yeah. in the past season.
Yeah. Which, what's more realistic than
I
that?
Know. I know.
So
truly.
Relatable.
I know. It's like, when you think about how Rachel Lindsay's season, you know, she had, like, her overnight with Nick Viall, I think, like, the day of the election or something, and they, like, didn't even talk about it, and it never comes up on the show.
Right, on Nick's season.
Yeah, it never comes up on the show, and it's, like, that is insane to me. And then, like, this show, like, you know, there's a zillion things going on, and it's still like, you voted for Trump? Like, what?
The real stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked before about how the simplicity of The Bachelor is so appealing and makes it so durable. But if you like a little more, like, chaos and mm-hmm. fun and, like, randomness in your shows, sometimes I do find it really refreshing. And, like, Are You the One is so good at it. And I wish more people watched it so we could all talk about it more.
Yeah. I mean, I have converted so many people already, and it has not been hard. I've just been like, you should watch this. And they'll be like, oh, my God, I watched it.
Just, like, try it.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to many conversions coming from this podcast. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us,
Thanks
Kate.
For having me again, guys.
Yeah, come back anytime.
Anytime. And that's it for this bonus episode of Here to Make Friends. Thanks to our guest, Kate Dries. Make sure to check out her great piece on Are You the One on Vice. And of course, thanks to our producers, Nick Offenberg and Sarah Patterson.
Please subscribe to Here to Make Friends wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss any of these bonuses or any of Hannah's season recaps. And give us a 5-star rating and review. It helps other people discover our show.
You can also give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram at Here to Make Friends Pod.
And you can follow us individually on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose.
We'll be back next week.